Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out. We got Bill on the remote equipment working from home. Bill, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, cool. We got Bill Cameron in the house as well. Busy day today on campus as another media viewing window for Auburn football practice and a media opportunity afterward, Hugh Freeze and some players. So, I mean, just in the last couple of days, yeah, we've gotten to talk with the offensive assistants, the defensive assistants, Hugh Freeze and some players, and watch a chunk of a practice today where Hugh Freeze, you know, for the second time since the media, second time in a row at a practice attended by the media, Hugh Freeze has not let that stop him from a moment or two of very intense, concentrated instruction. It was Perry Thompson,
yep,
a week ago when folks noticed, Hugh Freeze stepping in and telling Perry Thompson how it is, and then today, after, you know, a couple of missed opportunities through the air, Hugh Freeze, he had what we called a Spurrier moment.
Yeah,
watching it live.
Eyes are flying and everything. Yeah, he was disappointed and frustrated in a drill just not getting the ball out like he thought it was supposed to there. And I know some people have that video has kind of made the rounds a little bit this afternoon. Freeze talked about it afterwards, talking, it's like, hey, I think it's just when you call the play, get it out or execute it correctly, get a touchdown, and it's when that doesn't happen, you have to, you know, there's Dan, we talked about it earlier. I just think it just really underscores how much pressure is on this passing game and this offense to get it right, and I think you see that kind of come up in some of these practices. And on top of that, going off of that, probably the biggest news of the day, Auburn's wide receiver room is pretty banged up.
Yeah, beat up. Yep. Hey, I was going to say though, I think people maybe have not watched much football practice in the past to think that coaches don't ever get upset.
Oh my goodness,
with some of their stars. I mean, my goodness. I was thinking, and even Hugh, I think, sort of alluded to it. I mean, that's sort of a Spurrier moment that you saw in games. I mean, coaches, when they see something and the player doesn't do it, I'd be more disappointed if they just sort of came over and calmly said something.
Yeah, it's just it's football practice. It's football practice. Like that's my thing. It's like, and I think just people just don't know what happens a lot of times, or you know, wants to make everything a big deal out of what little get.
Oh, I wouldn't see it. Like, I would not. Maybe I've been to too many of these things to use what happened last week or use what happened today as proof of, like, oh, there's tension and
there are problems there.
There's conflict in the locker room, and you know, there's no. It's not that. It's just, yeah, I think it underscores. You know, I made this point on the Observer podcast earlier, Bill. Like, this is an Auburn offense because you're incorporating Jackson Arnold and you're replacing Jarquez Hunter with a group of largely unproven if talented running backs. Like, it's an offense that you would think would get sharper as the season goes on. As Jackson Arnold gets more experience with his teammates,
but they don't have the luxury of starting off too slowly with the schedule they have.
Exactly. So I mean, Auburn does not have they don't have time to get. I mean, they have time to get better, but they have to be sharp in that first moment against Baylor as well. And yeah, seeing some growing pains at times these last couple, especially with receivers limited. It's a reminder of how much of this is brand new.
Yeah, and I would say here, it just for those who don't know yet, haven't heard, Eric Singleton was not participating in practice today. He went knee to knee with somebody in practice the other day. Has a deep thigh bruise, according to Hugh Freeze. Expects him to be out a week, maybe a week and a half. Cam Coleman was in a non-contact jersey. They've been pretty careful with him in the preseason anyway, so that's not too surprising. Perry Thompson had a brace on his knee. Got to keep an eye on that. Mm-hmm. He wasn't fully participating in practice from the drills that we got to see on Thursday. And on top of that, Malcolm Simmons and Bryce Cain have been banged up with stuff as well. They were participating in practice. They looked to be, you know, full participants, but I mean, that's you know, half of your wide receiver room dealing with something right now to varying levels. Free said nobody's out with anything serious, and they expect those guys to be back at the max in a week or so. Think they'll be ready to go for Baylor, but it's just something you got to deal with this time of year.
And, you know, it's going to be something that could have an impact on the scrimmage tomorrow. I mean, if those guys aren't full go, it's going to be hard to expect all of a sudden the offense is going to light it up.
Yep, it's I don't know how much you can expect Auburn's offense to light it up, period, just because of the way the defense has been. But yes, I mean, for an offense that is feeling some pressure, feeling some heat, wanting to be better, wanting to execute. Freeze talked about it on Thursday after practice. Just a desire to execute better and be cleaner and just do better in these live periods and these scrimmages. Noting that, hey, the defense is going to have an advantage in some areas. Yes, Auburn's defense should be pretty good, and they were better than Auburn's offense was last season. But you could tell from talking to the offensive coaches this week, from talking to Freeze as well, they want to see more out of the offense. It's going to be tougher naturally to get more out of the offense when you don't have the full complement of your receivers, because mm-hmm. that's been a position group that's going to be so critical to this team. It's what they've kind of built this offense around, for better or worse.
But you know what? I think being without those receivers now gives Jackson even more practice working through some adversity, right? I mean, yep. The fact that, like, obviously, yeah, I'm not going to paint it as a positive if those receivers aren't available against Baylor, right? You'd rather have them. But right now, assuming they're going to be available against Baylor, right now it gives some other receivers a chance to work with Jackson. It gives Jackson a chance to work through some problems that it'll maybe be beneficial that he's faced during the season. And Bill, I did think there were a couple of receivers or a couple of guys that get targeted that had some really strong moments today and connecting with Jackson on those moments. I thought that we spent a big chunk of the podcast talking about Horatio Fields, who had another really strong day of practice and who feels like he's on my list, Bill, of guys that seemingly have solidified their role on the team over these last few weeks. Right? Like, I knew he was already expected to be one of however many receivers Auburn goes with, but you were waiting to see how the second year guys maybe broke through and Sam Turner had a strong spring and you had the freshman coming in. Feels like you're going to see a lot, especially early. You're going to see a lot of Horatio because they catch him they trust him to catch the ball.
Yeah, he showed in the spring. I mean, he has great hands, and you know, he's a long guy, but he has the ability to get open. But I mean, he's somebody. I think there's already been a pretty good meld with Jackson Arnold. That's one of the things that it just seems like they've got a little bit of a connection, and he's a guy that I think all the quarterbacks just feel like they can trust. Throw it there, and he's going to come down with it.
Yeah, Horatio seems like and just a tough matchup for defensive backs too, Justin. You sort of broke down mm-hmm. like the different – I mean, and defensive backs come in all shapes and sizes, especially when you're talking about guys who cover on the inside. You know, some are bigger than others, but it feels like Horatio consistently can find that. It's like a forward that can play the three and the four. Like, he can find the matchup problem if it's size, if it's speed, if it's strength. He finds it and he takes advantage of it.
I think he's got the best hands on the team, and I think he is one of the most physical, if not the most physical, of those wide receivers out there right now. He does a really good job of fighting for position, and I think it pops up in these drills a lot of times against some really good defensive backs that, you know, hey, I asked him about it a week or so ago, and his quote was, you know, I'm fast, but I'm not the fastest guy in the world. So I know that I'm going to have to win with my strength at times. And I think you see that. And I get some really fast DBs that may have a step on him or can cover ground a little bit better. He can out-muscle.
Yeah, and seeing Horatio on the Monarch machine,
yep,
like he is just a wizard at
so good.
You know, at the wide receiver equivalent of the batting cages, right? Like he goes out there and they, I mean, it doesn't matter where they put the thing, and it, he makes it look easy, and then you see almost anyone else try it, and you're like, oh right, especially without moving your feet, like that's. That's very difficult to have your feet set in a particular place and then go get that ball that's, you know, back into the left or something like that. And so Horatio is, yeah, he's somebody who showcased his hands again today. Somebody else that I thought showcased the hands today, Bill, you know, a guy we haven't talked about a lot, and we'll see what kind of role he has in the passing game, but someone we've talked about for about a half decade as a red zone threat,
yeah,
for Auburn. Brandon Frazier made a couple.
Brandon Frazier probably hit his best day I've seen this preseason.
He had a couple really impressive catches, and he's somebody, you know, we think about the other guys that can high point it for this Auburn team, and Jackson Arnold's ability to throw those alley-oops.
He already has a higher start than other guys that can high point it. I've always loved Brandon Frazier's hands. I thought he has very soft hands for, you know, for a guy that big. Reminded me of some of those old Arkansas tight ends.
Yeah, for sure, and that's something.
I just remember, Bill, do you remember when Brandon came in, and I know it was chaotic because it was 2020, but like when they were recruiting him, it was kind of like the Sal Cannella role, right? Like people were talking about him to be that kind of guy.
He was going to be the receiving guy. He was going to be the guy that could beat guys one-on-one.
Yeah, and so to see him kind of have that good day, again, he's not as quick as he probably once was, and I mean, it's just natural with the injuries he's been through and the fact that he's – you know, 24 or whatever.
None of us are.
No, but true. I also don't know if – I don't.
Speaking of which, how's the knee, Bill? I just real quick while we're on the subject of injuries.
The knee is better. It's just everything around it. I mean, yeah. I think now that I'm a week and a half out, the bruising of the muscles and the nerves and stuff around it, that seems to be the biggest problem now. But the knee seems to be coming along great. I can actually put enough weight to actually step up a step. Now, without having to hold on. So, I mean, I think it's coming along fine. It's just the other stuff is going to take a little longer than you hope.
Look, if you keep progressing in the right direction, you might have to line up a wide receiver soon. So, you know, you got to get ready for that.
That would be serious trouble.
You're out for the scrimmage tomorrow, right?
Absolutely.
All right, I'll tell you what, we're gonna take a break, and we're gonna come back with more. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Dan Peck in the studio, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls, Bill Cameron is beaming in from the home studio. We'll be back. You're listening to The Drive.
The Drive.
The Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck
on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Thursday edition of The Drive, just over 2 weeks away from Auburn and Baylor in Waco to start the 2025 season.
Yeah, I just realized this is going to be one of my last Thursdays before the start of the season because I'll be in Waco, or I'll be in Dallas, be heading to Texas this time in 2 weeks.
I was going
to
say,
crazy to think about.
Are you leaving? You're leaving the day before the game?
Yes.
Okay. So
always.
We'll try to catch you at some point. Mm-hmm. Maybe game day we might have you try to beam in at some point pregame
from the stadium
and see what you're doing. But that's looking forward to your coverage of that game. Of course, Wings 94.3 will have the Auburn Football Network.
A game week Tiger Talk in 2 weeks.
Auburn Sports Network coverage. Yeah, Tiger. Well, you got the first Tiger Talk
next week.
Yeah, get the first Tiger Talk next week.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
With Andy Burcham. You know, that's Monday the 18th, and then the game week one week later. So yeah, rapidly approaching as Auburn and Baylor start the 2025 season.
Hey, I wanted to ask you guys, were either of you there? Well, obviously you were. You were probably both there when Hugh came up. I thought it was interesting. And, again, the confusion continues to just reign over the question. We tried to sort of clear up a little bit yesterday, and Jason tried to get it cleared up with Hugh Freeze today. I still think I understand what he's saying, but I think it's really confusing to a lot of people when it comes to play calling.
Yeah.
Because of the – first of all – the title of offensive coordinator, play calling, game planning, I think all those three things are rolled into this, but the guy who's talking to the quarterback is Hugh Freeze. Am I not right?
Correct. And what the best way I can describe it is this. As the offensive coordinator, Derek Nix is in charge of game planning, scheming, getting things prepped for game day. As the game goes on, early downs, first downs, running downs, as the running back's coach and a guy who's more geared for the running game, he is the guy who that's you know, his area of expertise, right? Later downs, when it's obvious passing situations, when you're wanting to go deeper down the field and you're doing more standard dropback stuff, that responsibility, that area of expertise, is Ken Austin's. Hugh Freeze has the override for all of this. Hugh Freeze, like you just said, Bill, which is very important, is the one talking to Jackson mm-hmm. Arnold in the helmet. Okay, so Hugh Freeze, for all intents and purposes, is the play caller. But it is a collaborative effort because...
Yeah, that doesn't mean that he's the one who's deciding on what play is being called.
It's a collaborative effort. It's an input thing. I think a lot of modern college football staffs, I mean, think about it this way. When Gus Malzahn called plays at Auburn, he still had offensive coordinators. He still had Rhett Lashley. Did that mean that Rhett Lashley had no say in the offense whatsoever? Of course not.
Did Gus call plays the year Kenny Dillingham was the OC?
Yes.
Didn't Auburn bring Kenny Dillingham in?
And part of the reason why Kenny left was he was going to go call plays. Same thing with Rhett.
Right, and that's what a lot of people, just when they see the title offensive coordinator, they feel like that means he's calling the plays.
But that's
not necessarily the case. Hugh tried to explain that today. I mean, as offensive coordinator, Derek Nix is doing all the prep work, the game plan, the game practice. He's doing everything to get ready for the game. That doesn't mean that he's calling the plays in the headset.
But let's be very clear. This is Hugh Freeze's offense. Mm-hmm. This is his terminology. And he has the final say on plays. He may not be the one making, like, you know, saying the exact play call, making that decision every single time. It is a collaborative thing. It's less of him being a, you know, in years past, he was the guy. He was basically the head coach and offensive coordinator, the primary play caller. He's got a guy in Derek Nix he's worked with a ton who he trusts to do a lot of that stuff so Freeze can also do the things that a head coach needs to do at this level.
And we've been led to believe.
But this is Hugh Freeze's offense.
But that the first year, when Philip Montgomery was the offensive coordinator, Hugh Freeze had deliberately tried to sort of – you know, he was hands off.
It was a different scheme.
He was trying to do a little bit more CEO and a little bit more hands off. He brought in Derek Nix, someone that he'd worked with very closely, I think, under the anticipation. And I keep going back to what Jeff Lebby said at Media Days, where it's like more and more NFL coaches feel comfortable calling the plays on their side of the ball. More and more head coaches are guys that were at one point star coordinators. And it makes sense to not give that up. The thing that made you a hot commodity in the first place, you know, I would think that if DJ Durkin gets another chance to be a head coach in his college football career, I wouldn't be shocked at all if he called plays as a defensive coach.
Yeah, do you think Nick Saban and Kirby Smart didn't call defensive plays when they were head coaches?
So I think that it's like people have this idea that three or four Auburn coaches are bickering in the headset about which call to play, you know, which play to call, and then Jackson Arnold's hearing and then has to go to the line of scrimmage and figure out what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, let's be clear. Auburn's struggles on offense last season wasn't because of the play calling duties and who was doing what at the time. Auburn just didn't have a good offense.
Yeah, I mean, if Groucho Marx was the head coach, like maybe that's how this would work, where you'd have a routine beforehand. But no, this feels streamlined and coming from the head coach. Like, and again, I would not.
It's more common than people would think.
Yeah, what people don't. I mean, here's the simplest way for me to put it is like, all right, we're coming up third down gets, you know, the Auburn gets the ball. Derek Nix has a play in mind, and Hugh Freeze, like he said, is either going to go, yes, go with it, or I think I want to do something else.
Yeah, but, or I mean, hey, I'm thinking about this play right here. Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, Derek's thinking of what's going to happen on first down. Kent's thinking of what's going to happen on third down. But Hugh's going either, yeah, 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 or no, let's do this.
Oh, and that's the thing is, it's like, what do you think the headsets are for? Like, right. Like, you know, I mean, these guys have been communicating and talking to each other anyway. I mean, that's just how modern offense and modern defense really works now, too. You get input. There is one person who ultimately makes the decision. And to be very clear, that's Hugh Freeze. They're going to say.
And it should be. And yeah. And consider. Yeah, right.
And there's the thing. It's like, yes, is Derek Nix the offensive coordinator? Yes. Could Hugh Freeze call Derek Nix the primary play caller? Yes. But does that mean that Hugh Freeze is hands off on this offense? No. I think there was a really good quote. It was your question on Wednesday, Dan, completely unrelated, to Von Trucking Williams about, hey, has the offense asked any of your guys on defense to go play on offense? And what did Von Trell say? He said, hey, head man runs the offense.
Head man runs
so
the offense.
If he wants them, he can have them. And that's the thing. That's the guys have different roles and different responsibilities. At the end of the day, though, this is Hugh Freeze's offense, and he's going to be the one who has the last word in the headset.
Yeah, Von Trell seems to like his job too, and he, you know, he's having fun with it. And Bill, I saw a really cool drill today with the defensive lineman pivoting to something totally different from the play calling. They had a dummy, you know, they had a tackling dummy and then a crash pad behind the dummy, and they were sort of simulating blindside hits on the quarterback for defensive linemen, and how now in college football, for safety reasons, there are very clear rules about what's a legal hit and what isn't. So you can't hit the dummy too low. You can't hit the dummy too high. You can't land on the dummy, because that can get you an unnecessary roughness call in football now. And so it was a matter of like telling them that you had to hit the dummy in the strike zone and start to roll. Like, you wanted the play to end with the dummy on top of you and you with your shoulders down on the ground. And a couple of the guys just absolutely lit the dummy up at first.
Just,
and
then I mean, NFL blitz style decapitations. Yeah,
there were a couple of. I mean, it was made very clear early on why they could not, why they used a dummy and not a real person for this drill. And then seeing a couple of the guys where it's like Von Trell and the Rock had to be clear at no. You got to do this.
I do want Bill's thoughts on this, kind of going off of that. Bill, I don't know if you saw this, but Hugh Freeze said after practice today that because of the way things have been going in practices, they want to actually give some live reps or live-ish reps to the quarterbacks
in
practice, because they feel like, okay, our quarterback's running ability could be making more plays than maybe what we're seeing because you blow the whistle quickly. Here's the other part that we don't talk about enough with this angle. You've also got to let the defensive linemen and your pass rush practice having to stay like keep contained.
Stay in your lanes. That's
because,
right.
You know, not to go too far, you know, make it too simple, I think. But you got to think also, if you're a pass rusher, you can get out of your lane. And if you just get anywhere near the quarterback, you're going to get whistled down. But if you have to actually tackle that guy, you could be in terrible position, and it's going to hurt you on Saturday. So I found it very, very interesting that Freeze said, hey, there might be a period where we're just going to have to let him go. And I think they're going to want to be smart with it. But Auburn's quarterbacks all can run, and I think that's going to have to be a key part of this offense this year.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a way to, you know, just as you said, I mean, it's going to help. It could help the offense in these scrimmages where the defenses, you know they're not concerned about the quarterback getting away. So it could help the offense there, but it should help the defense not to get used to either overplaying or not being ready for the guy that has that ability to make those plays. But, I mean, obviously the caveat in there is somebody might get hurt. But that's, you know, it's football.
No, you want to find that balance of what's the appropriate amount of risk, right? Like, what's the appropriate amount of risk for your quarterbacks in that situation? You want to simulate. You want to give the defense a look at an offense that can run from the quarterback position. Sawyer's a pretty mobile guy,
yep.
Right? So you want to show a little bit of that before Auburn plays Baylor. You want the offense to be used to seeing Jackson Arnold and you know make plays with his feet and things like that. But you're right, Bill. You don't want to jeopardize anybody's availability for the Baylor game, because the whole point of this is giving Auburn best chance to win, and the best chance to win is with everyone
to have your best players healthy
and ready to go. So yeah, not that's something that big, and they were, and I think they were, you know, by design taking it a little bit easy today compared to previous practices.
Oh yeah,
they,
day before scrimmage, sure.
You got an important scrimmage tomorrow, and yeah, looking forward to hearing reports as to how it goes. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, hanging out in the studio. Bill at home beaming in. We'd love to hear from you. That's the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. We'll be back with more. You're listening to The Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Hanging out. Bill Cameron on the home studio. Feeling better. Good to hear as we await Bill's triumphant return to ESPN 106.7 HQ. We got a... We're going on the road next week, Bill.
Yeah, I saw that next Friday, right?
Yeah, excited for a remote next Friday, and I think we'll be on location a little bit more as we get into the season. But yeah, we'll be at a Winter Timbers Outdoors over by Opelika and University, kind of adjacent to the mall, mm-hmm. over there. We'll be hanging out there next Friday. And so always excited about opportunities to take the show on the road. But Bill, it was, it's cool to get the amount of access we've gotten. And one of the players, Justin, that I know you were excited about talking to after practice today was Darrell Robinson, right? That's a guy who, like, Bill, it's the Auburn's ability to run the ball is still, I don't know what we're going to know before the Baylor game, and it feels like one of the wild cards is what kind of production are you going to get out of players like Damari and Jeremiah and Omar, and Justin was talking to him and dodging punts.
No, I got hit.
Oh yeah, well, unsuccessfully.
Y'all can find video of that online. I got absolutely squared up by a punt today. Yeah, no, just wasn't,
heroically diving in front of.
I protected Darrell more than anybody in there, so I mean, if he has a good season, y'all can thank me. No, Darrell Robinson was really interesting to talk to him, dude, who's I think is just very, very energetic. I think his passion. He talked a lot about how much he loved football and loved getting an opportunity in the SEC. I think he's got an opportunity, and if he breaks out early, he's gonna be a fan favorite really quickly. And watching him this preseason, I like his game a lot. There was some comps to style-wise to Tank Bigsby a while back, and I see it, man. Like, I really do see it kind of watching him run the ball. It's really good acceleration, one-cut type of stuff, and, if he gets his opportunity, I wouldn't be surprised if he takes it full-on. He's a fun player to watch, and today got to see him kind of do more of the receiving stuff, some of the passing game stuff that – Bill, we were talking about it earlier. If you're going to play running back in this offense, you've got to be a weapon in the passing game. And I think people are overlooking that when, we're talking about Damari. I think a big reason why Damari Alston's first in line right now is not necessarily just because he's older than everybody, but I think it's just they trust him in the passing game.
Oh, yeah, you better be able to. I mean, that's in a Hugh Freeze offense, the backs are going to have to be able to catch the ball and protect the quarterback. So that's something that it looks like Darrell, who it's funny, he looks bigger when he's out there than some of the other guys, but he's listed, not too much. Maybe he's a couple of inches taller. But
he's a legit 6'1".
Yeah, that's good. Well, I think Auburn lists him at 6 foot for some reason, mm-hmm. but – But yeah, I mean, he looks a little taller than that. But I mean, good to see him and know that he is healthy and good to go.
He said this is the healthiest he's been since his junior year of high school in terms of just how he's feeling. And yeah, I mean, you think about the numbers he put up last season at UConn. I think people are saying, oh, he wasn't even the number one running back. Oh, it was at UConn. I give you this dude was playing through turf toe and was one of the more explosive backs in the group of five level.
Tell you what else, he's another one of, you know, I feel like Auburn's going to frequently make visits up to Baltimore and go check out what's going on in St. Francis.
Golly, that connection is already really really strong, isn't it?
I mean, you got Darrell, you've got three true freshmen.
Yep.
Right, and all of whom
got a big time commitment.
And, you know, all of whom could factor into playing time this year. And you've got a commitment for next year. So yeah, it's remarkable what's going on up there. You know, on the
classic Auburn recruiting hotbed of Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah. You know that.
Yeah, you thank DJ Durkin for that.
Yeah, it's and I know Hugh Freeze and his team recruited the D.C. area heavily at Liberty.
Yeah,
and I know Ben right. Agamawa still has some connections right. up there and Auburn, because there were some D.C. guys on that first year team, but then going out and getting the former coach at Maryland in D.J. Durkin is only strengthened.
And it just makes sense. I mean, that's an area that's very, very – when you talk about D.C., Maryland, the Northern Virginia area, it's just a very talent-rich area. I think, you know, like traditionally, like Virginia Tech's been really, really good at recruiting there. I mean, recently the Big Ten powers, Michigan has made a living down there, Ohio State, and we've seen here recently, we've seen Georgia go up there a good bit as well in that area. So makes sense for Auburn to take advantage of the links that they've gotten. They've got some really good players. I tell you one thing, and Darrell Robinson can move in there. Auburn's got some athletes from down there. We were watching Darian Smith today, working with Keldrick Falk, just kind of by themselves, and he's a fun player. I think in time he could be. You know, a really, really fun prospect, because very athletic for a guy his size, and people are already kind of buzzing about him a little early on.
Yeah, I mean, the word is he's one of the best pass rushers that Auburn has of the, you know, the non-Bucks.
Yeah, he's got some wiggle, he's got some burst to him that, like, you know, Jordan Crawford, Malik Autry, Antonio Coleman, those guys might not have quite as much because they're different types of players, different body types. Mm-hmm. But then that, and then, you know, Juice Diaz is just everywhere. And to hear the other day him that, you know, he's starting on four different special teams units already. I mean, he's going to be he's a madman. He run fast, hit hard. I mean, there's so many of these guys, and I think Bryce Kane's a really good example of this as well. We talked about Jared Smith yesterday with when it comes to special teams. But, like, Bill, like one of the things I think stood out to me, this goes back to talking to Hugh Freeze at SEC Media Days in Atlanta, asking him about Auburn's need to improve its special teams in so many areas. One of the things I think you could see a difference in with this team that people may not be talking about is when you've added this much talent and this much speed and this much athleticism, some of these guys who might not be key players on offense and defense right away can make for some type of talent on special teams, because their athleticism and their motor can play right away, even if they don't have maybe the skill set or the experience to be trusted heavily on offense or defense right now. I think, you know, Bryce Kane's not a freshman, but he's a great example of that, and obviously Bryce Diaz and Jared Smith as well.
Yeah, I mean, they're not having to learn as many different plays and scenarios. I mean, it's pretty much it is what it is when you're on, you know, punt, kick, either coverage or returns.
Yep, and those guys, I think, are going to be really, really impressive. See, and we saw Auburn last season, you know, struggle in special teams, not just kicking field goals, but I think if this can be a better coverage team, this can be a cleaner return team, it could go a long way. Because, I mean, how much hidden yardage did Auburn give up last season with penalties on special teams, with not catching punts, with making mistakes there? And obviously, of course, the big one that a lot of people point out is the number of field goals that they missed.
Yeah, you know, if you can just not always be starting inside your 25, you give yourself so much better chance at the percentage of you being able to get some points. And Auburn started in terrible field position and seemed like they were allowing teams to start in better field position. Wasn't always the kicker's fault, but things were going on. So, I mean, if you know, you pick up that extra – 30, 40 yards in field position throughout the game, that can make a difference in 3 or 6 points.
Hard to quantify like how important that would be to this year's team if you can start to like.
Auburn was bottom 15 or bottom 20 in the country last season in starting field position on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I mean if you can get closer to the average, let alone turning that into a strength, like that could make a big difference towards what this team can do. And one would think that even though you're dealing with some inexperience, if you're running a lot of the first and second year players out there as your special teamers, like elevating the overall level of athleticism and putting some high quality player, like I don't know, that's one of the things that could very well help. Lunsford singled out some special teams contributors and we just talked about it. Well, he mentioned the return game.
Yeah,
it seems like Pleasant and Singleton, which is what we expected. We'll see how much Singleton's injury limits that. And it's cool to hear. I mean, it's.
I think Pleasant's going to end up being the guy.
I could see that too. Yeah,
especially if you want to use Singleton as punt returner. And that makes plenty of sense. But yeah, sure hands, the acceleration.
I thought it was interesting too with Lunsford talking about Singleton. It wasn't necessarily his potential to create a big play after the catch.
Catch it.
It's the fact that he's the guy that had shown to that point the most ability to make really difficult catches, to go get the ball and not let it. And as he pointed out to you, Justin, like Bill, you talk about the hidden yardage on special teams.
Yeah.
Letting a punt hit the ground.
No.
And roll.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Roll 10, 15 yards instead of catching it, you know, exactly where you can. That can add up over the course of a game or over the course of a season. Having a weapon like Singleton, even if he's not making plays, and look, he's capable of making plays after the punt.
I'm telling you, any Auburn fan, you know, you can sit here and say, do we need to play this certain guy, punt returner? You don't want to risk him to injury. You know, I get all that. If you're an Auburn fan watching the last few years, you just want dudes who can catch. Yep. Just catch the punt and. You know, if it's just catch the punt on a fair catch and that's where the ball is, that's a whole lot better than what Auburn's had the last few seasons on a consistent basis at punt returner.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And then anything you get is a bonus. But Auburn's got some guys that if they catch it can give them plenty of bonus yards.
Yeah, you also talked about Bryce Kane being a former high school center fielder and how that's helped him out being a punt returner. I've always thought of him as a kick return guy, but if he's tracking the ball really well as a punt returner, that makes plenty of sense as well.
I mean, singled out Singleton and Malcolm before Bryce, but still mentioned Bryce and also mentioned, you know, Bryce is one of those guys that could be a really important special teams piece this year, even if he's not the returner. Like, even if he's not catching kick returns and punt returns, he could still be, with his ability to... I mean, think about a guy like Bryce Kane on kick return coverage, right? Like, that's a guy who can get down the field incredibly quickly to help you, to help you gum things up for the other team. His ability as a gunner on punt return. Like, there are other aspects where, even if it's not Bryce's turn this year, if it's Singleton, if it's Pleasant, if it's Malcolm... there could still be important jobs for Bryce to do, and there could be the potential of a flashier role in the future. 334-321-1390. Love to hear from you. Is there a player or a position group that you're particularly interested in? You know, that you're concerned about, excited about. Let us know. 334-321-1390. Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. If you missed any of the show so far, podcast The Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcast, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. We'll be back with more. You are listening to The Drive.
The ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of hour number one here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Speaking of the Auburn Observer, what is it? I keep hearing about it. Tell folks about what's going on there at the Auburn Observer.
AuburnObserver.com. Check it out. Practice observations this afternoon went up over 2,500 words on what we saw and heard today. I had, I mean, I think I lost count of how much stuff we got with the assistant coaches. You can check that out as well. A ton of stuff from Auburn preseason camp. Dan and I had a podcast that's going to go up in the morning as well. Had another one earlier this week. AuburnObserver.com. Check it out. $4 a month or $40 a year when you get this discount between now and the start of the season. So you've got a couple weeks left to jump on that. Everything we do gets sent straight to your email inbox as soon as it drops. So if you want all of the info, all the intel from Auburn preseason practices and get you ready for the start of the season, AuburnObserver.com.
I've been a subscriber for I guess I'm not really a subscriber anymore now that I'm
But
I was a charter member of the Auburn Reserve. It's like the old hair club for men, Bill. I'm not just a subscriber.
All three of us, myself and the boys, are also.
Hey, we're happy to have the Cameron clan on board with us.
And I think that Justin, you've done a great job of sort of, you know, if folks weren't able to go out there for preseason camp, you've been able to provide the gist.
We've gotten so much. Even today, I felt like the 45 minutes we watched was probably the least eventful. But when you combine that with the interviews we've gotten this week, what we got to hear today afterwards, it's been a lot of access. And look, people are excited. I think the thing with this team coming up is that, you know, there's still plenty of question marks, but there is a sense of optimism because, you know, I think it's a mix of excitement and pressure where you look at it and say, hey, this team should be better. And Auburn fans are just desperate to see that turnaround happen. And I think this team has the ability to do so. They got some stuff they got to straighten out. And like you said, there's going to be a lot that we aren't going to know for sure until we get to the Baylor game in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Bill, I made this point on the Observer show, but like the – you know, so and especially for folks who have watched college football for a while – like you wanna draw parallels to last season or 2 years ago or 5 years ago or 50 years ago, and you say, hey, you know this app, but it's like there's so much roster turnover now. It's harder than you're not last year's team anywhere in college football. You're not last year's team in a more pronounced way than ever. And so I would look at Auburn and say, yeah, you've had some disappointing moments. You know, of late, you had some games last year where maybe you thought you let things slip away. In general, you know, I would, you know, we'll see how much carryover there is because, you know, we usually bet on talent in these situations. Like when we're talking about in a vacuum, if we're talking about Auburn, just in general, I would say, oh, it's a talented team, but they've had a dark stretch or a stretch of bad luck. That you know, it ends up not mattering when you get the right pieces in there. Tennessee.
Yeah, but you know what? I would say, I mean, I agree with that, but then I think it doesn't hurt when you do have as much carryover and returnees as Auburn has that were young guys last year. I mean, it's not like Auburn's got a bunch of fourth and fifth year guys who haven't ever won anything. They've got a bunch of young guys who expected to win last year and didn't win that they're bringing forward. And so, I mean, that is part of the talent, but it does help that there is a little more retention and understanding of what they want to do.
That's absolutely right. And it's not, I mean, yes, I mean, because I would never argue against continuity, but I would also think that, like, yeah, it's just tougher than ever before to you know, project with confidence what a team is going to be. And I would use that sort of both ways with Auburn because it's like, yeah, I mean, yes, you have some recent negativity. But you also have reason to believe this team could be a really tough matchup for a lot of the teams that it faces this season on the field. I would caution folks against relying too much on the past to project what this team is going to be. Although a lot of it's a mystery, a lot of it's still like a total wild card going into the 2025 season, and that's part of what makes following college football such a roller coaster is that even you know you can bring a lot back, and there's no telling what it could mean for next year. You could bring virtually nothing back and be resetting, and that can we've seen that work out for teams. So yeah, really excited about the upcoming year and what that could eventually mean, but We will we'll talk about it more in hour number two. 334-321-1390. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill beaming in from home. Justin Ferguson in the house. Drew at the controls. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Hour number two. Drew at the controls. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer.
Hello.
AuburnObserver.com.
Got hit with a football today.
Hit with a football.
Twice.
You can find video of that across
yeah,
social media.
I'm looking for that.
If you look at the AL.com video of Darrell Robinson's interview, features, I believe our pal Rosie has uploaded video of this, which is like a 2-minute clip of Darrell, and then towards the end of it, there's a heads up, and I believe Ferg and Philip Marshall prominently in the shot behind behind Darrell.
Philip would have caught it.
But it's you can find that wherever you find stuff. But yeah, it's one of the a great day getting to watch some football practice on campus. A lot of access this week as we've been able to talk with Auburn players and assistant coaches and head coach Hugh Freeze before the team scrimmages tomorrow. Let me ask you something, Justin.
Yeah.
Like, what do you sense they're really going to be like? What do you feel like are priorities of the scrimmage? Like, what do you feel like if you want to drill in on a position group or a goal?
I think this scrimmage is big to determine, okay, who are guys that they're going to be able to trust first game out in terms of your offense and your defense? Like, who are the wide receivers you're going to be in the rotation? Who's the running backs you're going to be in the rotation? Who are, you know, defensive line, all three of those levels. It's just who separates themselves and be like, all right, when we get ready for Baylor, this guy is going to be in part of our plans. I think that's really big because once you get to Sunday, it becomes kind of an extended game week. They're going to go ahead and start kind of mimicking what you do to get ready for Baylor. And, you know, that's what makes this scrimmage right here very, very important is that it's a good time for guys to – lockdown roles, not permanently, but at least for that first game, because you're playing such a big game that first game.
Yeah, I think that's generally what second scrimmages are about, mm-hmm. is to go ahead, because from this point on, you're really starting to get into the game planning and determining who's going to be on the scout team, and even the guys that aren't on the scout team that might make the trip, that'll be on the travel squad, you still want to work with the ones that you feel you have the most confidence in. So that's why it's critical. There's so many guys that are battling to be that second guy in, I think, at so many positions there, Justin.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, we've heard so much this offseason about, hey, we need this many defensive linemen to play 10, 15, 20 plays a game. All right, who are those guys? Like, and I think you're going to find that. And who may be, all right, we may need a little bit more time, may need to see kind of how they react, you know, maybe in the Ball State game or the South Alabama game before you can fully trust them. For that Baylor game in week one, though, you're starting to think, I mean, you got to think about bringing a travel squad. You got to start bringing, and you start to narrow it down. And for some of these other guys, it's okay. This may not be a key spot for you, but you may have a special teams role for you right away. So it's just very much about kind of, all right, let's identify who we've got. We've got things installed. We're getting things drilled in. We're working on all that. Before we flip the page to let's make a plan to beat this Baylor team in week one, who are going to be like, you know, before you get to the what, you got to know the who.
And we like to focus on starting lineups and depth charts, and it's a lot of fun. The Bill Cameron depth chart is
I'm working on it right now.
And it's an important document. But the fact is, especially when you like your depth as much as this team.
Yeah, good luck on linebacker, Bill, by the way.
Seems to like its depth.
I mean, the thing is, I can bracket. I'm actually putting oars in mine. I haven't usually done that before.
Yeah, that's about to say, like, because there's going to be a ton of oars whenever that one comes out. And again, they don't really put much stock into it.
That's where
linebackers, because it's not necessarily strong and weak.
Nope.
I mean, you got guys that are playing both sides.
You got guys playing both safety positions and the nickel. Yep. Like, you know, it's kind of a blend.
Let me ask you this, Justin. Are there spots where you do think it kind of matters competition? Like, there's spots where it's like, oh, you know, there is a difference in how much the starter and the backup sort of see. Are there spots
offense.
Where – offense. Okay, and where the competition is still going on? Like spots where
wide receiver,
say wide receiver, maybe running back too, right? I mean,
yeah, running back. I think running back's probably going to be a little bit more open, but running back and wide receiver are the two ones I thought about the most.
Right, because on defense, you know, even if you name a starter, you could still see the backup a lot, and it could change drive to drive. Offense, it does seem
you roll a lot more on defense. Offense especially with as much pressure as on Auburn's offense, you're going to want your key guys to get going.
And I would think that Damari, just because he's been first up at so many of the things we've watched, like we'll get the first opportunity there. But they clearly love Durrell, and they're giving the ball to Jeremiah Cobb a great deal as well. So like even that's like that, you know, they could have a plan at running back. And after two or three drives, they could that plan could be considerably different. But tomorrow night seems to be an important day in determining, you know, who's going to get the first. I would think that a big day by one of the running backs tomorrow could go a long way towards putting yourself in position as part of the game plan against Baylor.
Go ahead, Bill. I was just going to ask Justin. I mean, while you were watching Auburn High last year, did you have any idea that? That you could be looking and seeing Omar out there really, really pushing for playing time this year at Auburn?
No, because for starters, nobody
was listed. He was a sophomore.
Yeah, he was a junior last year. No, I've always thought of Omar Mabson as an SEC running back. I've always thought of Omar Mabson as advanced for his age. He's always kind of played up his whole career, and he's been super impressive. To see him do that at the college level for a kid who did not have spring ball has been one of the more remarkable things. And I don't know how much he'll play against Baylor, but, man, I think he's going to get some opportunities early.
Oh, I agree. Go ahead, Dan.
334-321-1390, the number to dial. And we've got Brett hanging on the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. What's up, Brett?
Hey, Dan. Y'all tell me what you've heard from people who are there watching practice regularly. Do they think Jackson Arnold is an upgrade from last year? I would think in the run game he definitely is.
Mm-hmm.
But you hear all this, well, he's holding the ball too long a lot of times. And, you know, I know it's only one throw. We saw that video today.
Yeah.
And that was, gosh, awful. But, has he looked better according to the people who are there a good bit? I'm not talking about the players, because the players always say, oh, yeah, he's doing great. Yeah,
right. Sure. Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, Brett, like from what I've seen, I've gotten to see a good bit of practice. I think Arnold has been an upgrade from what we saw from Thorne at this point last season, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fit and just the RPO stuff, the quick decision making. Now, yes, there's stuff like today, holding on to the ball a little too long, last week at practice, I thought last Thursday was the best we've seen him. I thought he had some really, really good throws today as well. I just think you're seeing a better, you know, a more talented quarterback and a better fit at quarterback than what you had these last couple of seasons. You got to make it count in the game. But the potential is there, and I do think there is a difference from what you're seeing at quarterback than when you did last year. I don't know how big of a difference. Like, it might not be revolutionary once the season starts. But I will say I do think because he's a better fit, I just think his arm talent's better. You are seeing an upgrade there.
And the thing that I think Jackson could provide that you've missed the last couple of years too, and I know this would fly in the face of the idea that he was holding onto the ball too long on a couple of drills today, and Hugh Freeze got onto him about it, is that he does seem to have a willingness to get rid of it quickly, and to check it down to, you know, to a safety valve or a security blanket or a third or fourth option, which is something that I think was missing from the Auburn offense of late. And I guess the danger is there was optimism around Thorne this time last year.
Yes.
There was the thought that Thorne had made great strides and that Auburn was going to make this
huge breakthrough. Yes, correct.
So the danger in comparing what you're hearing about Jackson now to last year is that I think there was probably more confidence in the passing game going into last year because you weren't breaking in a new quarterback.
Yeah.
Like I think that's not to say people thought Thorne was better than Arnold is now, but I think that because so much is new about this one.
Everybody was so excited about the freshman
year
receivers.
Yes.
So I would say that it's
I would say though from my perspective and from what I've heard and from other people who've been there, I think they see a better quarterback right now. We'll see how that translates to the season. But, yeah, I keep coming back to I think the fit's better. I think the arm's better. And at his best, he has looked better.
And one more thing is that I think Arnold's decisiveness was one of the things that led them to go get him.
Which is why today, when it doesn't happen, you see Hugh Freeze react the way he does.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went back and watched the Ole Miss – Oklahoma game from last year. Even though he got sacked 8 times, he wasn't indecisive. Mm. So that's what's throwing me off. I don't understand why that's become a problem.
I'll tell you what part of it is, Brett, is Hugh Freeze is a perfectionist, and he wants it right then. The split second is coming open. He wants that ball to already be there, and that's something he's really going to go after Jackson. And you haven't seen it that much. And again, like I said earlier, I'm not upset to see a coach do that with a quarterback that he's seems.
I will say,
pleased with.
I will say that to Brett's point, that first Saturday practice we saw all of it at Jordan-Hare. I thought at the 11-on-11, there were some times where it felt like he was holding on to it a little too long. But there have been other times where you've heard so much. And seen so much this preseason, it's a quick release. It's a quick release. And, like, the best part of his game, if you go back to Oklahoma last year, was getting that ball out and doing the quick stuff because they didn't have the protection or really the receivers to get downfield a ton. And I think in an RPO system that they're wanting to run with the one-on-one type of playmakers that they've got, I think that's a strength of his game. So, like what Brett's saying, like, today, like, when you have that indecisiveness – it gets even more frustrating for the coaching staff because it's like, not only do we know you can do it, it's like you have to do it in the way they want to run this offense. So I think that's why it kind of became the way it was today.
Last thing, I do like that route that they were showing in that video. That's the one that Alabama beat Auburn on in 2021. And basically, if you've got somebody fast and quick like Simmons or Singleton, it's basically uncoverable. There's no way you can cover.
Oh yeah, those whips are really, really nice. And yeah, I mean, I think Singleton wasn't out there today, but he's been excellent on those. And I think in a red zone, it's such a weapon. You get a guy one on one, you get him going one way, and you go the other. It's game over. So yeah, I will say that, Brett, that I have seen them work on that a lot more than usual this year.
Good deal. All right, y'all have a great evening.
Appreciate the vocal. Yeah, we started the show talking about some of the red zone weapons that have emerged. You know, guys that we saw today, even with some receivers limited. I just feel like, and Hugh Freeze, the catch radius guy, especially in the red zone. Yeah, I wonder how heavily, like even if they're not necessarily the first names you think of, right? Auburn's got Eric and Cam and Malcolm and Perry to throw it to, but I would think in the red zone, Horatio Fields could matter a ton because
Preston Howard
and Frazier.
Yeah,
I think Brandon is somebody that, you know, keep in mind, Bill, Hugh Freeze talked about Brandon Frazier and Peyton Thorne talked about Brandon Frazier in the red zone last year, and he gets hurt. He's targeted several times in the Cal game, and then he gets hurt against New Mexico and misses most of the season. I think there was a plan for Frazier, even on a team with Rivaldo and Luke Deal.
Oh, I think so, too.
I think there was a short yardage plan for Frazier a year ago, and they couldn't really carry it out. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if there's more of that this year. Great stuff, Brett. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. I think we got to take a break, so we'll be back with more. Love to hear from you. That's the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. We got more show coming up with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, along with Bill and Dan. We'll be back. This is The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. ESPN 106.7.
Online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the, or hour number two of the Thursday edition.
Please,
of the Drive.
It's hour two.
No, that's right.
It's not. It's moving slowly enough.
We are powering through on a. No, and it's more. And Bill, it's been a long. I mean, this was a morning practice. Ferg and I recorded.
It's been a long day for Dan.
It's a very long day for Dan.
Ferg and I recorded. Hey, I've been put. You know what? For this station, between media days, you know, you know, a couple days a month, I'll put in real work. All right, you know, I'm happy to. A couple days a month,
a lot of people would argue that what we do is real work.
I will plug in.
I literally just said that to Dan during the break. I was like, I don't have a real job, but man, I am tired. I've been doing something work related for 9 straight hours.
For the listeners, a couple of days a month, I will plug in the alarm clock. And I will make sure that I'm up at a certain time.
You know, Man, Bill,
what a guy.
You know,
what
Bill,
a guy. What
you know,
dedication.
You know, Bill, I knew Dan was dedicated to today because I didn't wake up this morning and see that I had a text from him at like 3:15. Because that's usually what happens.
Yeah.
I usually get the he'll text important. Me something at 3 a.m. and I'm like, brother, I've been asleep for hours.
Important stuff though is the midnight to 3 a.m. text messages, you know. That's when the vital stuff gets.
You didn't respond to my Wings 94.3.
That's true. That's an excellent point. No, and again, we really really appreciate the access. Like it's been cool to be able to formulate these opinions and get to see. I mean, we've been able to watch a lot of practice. We've been able to familiarize ourselves with players at different positions. Bill, I've got a couple. You know, I mentioned Horatio Fields. I've got a couple of players where I thought Horatio was going to have a role going in, but like there are a couple of guys where I would, you know, my short list of who I am convinced you have a pretty significant role going into the season on either side of the ball. And one of the guys I was talking about him with Justin earlier today, Chris Murray. I think you're going to see a lot of Chris Murray.
They didn't bring him in. They didn't bring him in to just stand on the sidelines and take up a spot.
No, and Rock Bellantoni, you know, talked about he loves the improvements Chris Murray has made since getting here. This is a guy too. You know, I know people would think, and I'm not going to name any names here, but in the first 2 years of the Freeze era, they took a chance on someone who had to make the jump to the SEC. Who it turned out probably wasn't physically ready for SEC football. Like they brought in guys from the mid majors or from the FCS, and it was like, you know, we'll take a chance because we need to add people to this room. And the SEC was too big of a jump for some of those guys. Guys who had been productive at other levels in their college football careers. Chris Murray, you would think, like this is a guy who went through an offseason and a half at TCU. Right, like it's not so much about making the jump to major conference college football. And he didn't play a lot at TCU before going to Sam Houston, but he was a very real recruit coming out of high school and spent 2 years at a Big 12 team in the workouts and in the off-season training. So I think this is someone who, you know, especially with. I think some question. This is where I Justin, you sort of like. I think Kieron was one of the players that folks, you know, that whole position. It's important for Auburn to get a pass rush. Folks wanted to know where it was going to come from. Kieron needs to, you know, Kieron was someone who needed to take a step forward from what he showed last year. I think Chris Murray he stayed step for step in this competition so far, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if you saw a lot of Chris Murray in the Baylor game in 2 weeks. Like what's your assessment of?
I mean, Keyron Murray number two Buck plays a good bit. I mean, that was Keyron last year, and Keyron was fourth on the team in pressures.
And I think Keyron and Murray, it could be the split right now could be closer than it was between because you had a pretty proven guy in McLeod last year as your number one. It feels like this year there's a little bit more competition. Like what's your assessment there? It's like it's Keyron. You know that's a player that folks are, you know, hoping takes that next step, and then beyond Keyron, like what's your
at Buck?
Yeah,
I mean it's then you go to the redshirt freshman. Yeah. I think. I mean,
yeah, and I don't know how much we're gonna see of them. It was the talk yesterday was about
Chris
them
Murray's getting got to play.
Yeah, getting them back going after being injured. I mean. It sounded like Jared Smith may have a shot to get in the rotation. Yeah. But I think $2 is probably what you – I mean, you think about it last season. Besides Jalen and Keyron, who played at Buck?
Ooh, not very many.
Exactly. No, so
yeah, you didn't get much at all from anybody else.
Did they run Riddick out there ever at the Buck? Like, that would have been my next guess.
No, but sometimes you go two strong guys depending on the situation you've got. If you know it's if you can get pressure from a guy that you – play at the strong side end, like you're talking about, Jared Smith. I mean, you could see Amaris, go out there to that spot and go, you know, Amaris and Keldrick at the same time on the outside.
There was a bit of a dance break that happened with the defensive lineman when they were playing one song, and Amaris and Jamonte Waller showcasing showcasing
their moves.
some serious moves, and Amaris and Chris Murray. Is a really tantalizing sort of second unit there at end and edge rusher. Like, you know, you feel good about what you've got with Keldrick and Keyron, obviously, but I think there's those are two players who seem to have had really strong off seasons and really strong preseason camps in Amaris Williams and Chris Murray. Really want to see what they can do with them. We had Jason in here yesterday. And he mentioned Fagans, right? As like if you go into the secondary, like someone maybe beyond the starters. Like Justin, is there a defensive back? I know there's been a lot of talk around Jay Crawford. Is there a defensive back that you get the sense is having a really strong preseason camp? Someone who has maybe improved.
I mean, it's easy to say this one because he was. Probably going to be a starter anyway, but I think Sylvester Smith looks great at nickel. I've really liked the way he's worked out at nickel, and I think Champ Anthony being able to play safety more kind of helps kind of with his game. But Sylvester Smith's just a guy, kind of a do-it-all type of dude, and I think nickel's a great spot for him. He does well covering in the slot. He's a good run support guy. I've been really, really impressed with Sylvester this preseason, and I guess if I had to throw another one, I like both of the new transfer corners, Rayon and Rayshon. Like, I think Rayon's been really impressive in just his ability to go get, like, you know, bat balls away.
Strader's a great answer, too.
Fight in the air. And I think Rayshon, since he's come back from that little injury slowdown early on, he's looked really, really good. I thought really impressive. And he gets that added bonus, you know, of potentially being a kick return guy.
There are times when you can tell, Bill, that the true freshmen are going through their first preseason camp and getting a little bit more instruction or having to be, all right, this is what we expect. This is true of defensive line, too. Where it's like you'll see a drill and it's like, no, let's see that again with the true freshman. Let's make sure you're doing it this time. In the secondary, you're seeing some of that where Pleasant and Strader and a guy you've mentioned, Robinson, like,
yeah, he was a guy that Justin, you know, I had trouble, you know, fitting him in anywhere near the top two on my depth chart, but I kept looking out. Now I haven't been able to see practice obviously the last few days. But it seemed like every time I was out there, he was getting some work with the ones and twos, especially with the ones.
Yo, Robinson.
Jaquez.
Yeah, seems to me kind of like a two. I think my thing is you may have seen him a little bit more with the ones right now because Champ Anthony's kind of on that pitch count.
Sure, but I mean, last year it would have taken quite a few guys being not out there for
I would say, and he's interesting because it's like him and like Jacoby Matthews and Tate Seymour, that group of safeties compared with the New Boy Fagans, Eric Winters, I would throw – I'd throw KLF in there as well, just as a guy who can play, that nickel safety spot. It's interesting. I'm interested to see what of that, two groups of thought, and at safety, who gets the more reps there. Is it more of the veterans? Is it more of the young guys? Is it a mix? I think there and cornerback. I mean, all across the secondary, you can kind of see it's like, okay, once you get into that second level, who's going to be trusted to be in that second level? And the second level at corner, I feel more confident about the transfers than maybe the safeties right now.
It would be easy to sort of pick the veterans early, right? And say, all right, the younger guys will,
if the safeties can play, they can play.
Yeah. And we've seen winners and
The whole team last year was, if you're ready, go ahead. And play. So, I think you're hearing more and seeing more about Strader and Pleasant than like the would be and star level. Yep. Like here a little bit, you kind of feel like there may be a little bit more separation there. Safety though, I just feel like it's wide open. It's kind of how I feel about linebacker too. It's just like, you could roll any linebacker combo right now for Auburn out there right now and be like, yeah, probably.
And being a true freshman does not seem to limit opportunities at linebacker at all. Nope. They're looking at Juice. They're looking at Melendez. And I would think it's safety.
I think if you're asking me, the inside linebacker who has had the best preseason camp is probably Xavier Atkins, who is not a true freshman but is new to the program. He's been very impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in the spring he looked like he was a tweener. Weren't sure if he was a linebacker or if he might have to be a safety.
I want to say the first two times we talked to Hugh Freeze after fall practice started, he singled out Xavier Atkins as a guy who had really impressed him. I know that was the one time I think we were after the practice in the stadium. He talked about Atkins and Juice are players who can they can, even when they make a mistake, they're making it at such a high speed that they can recover, and that's a really important, like, that, when they make mistakes, they can recover from it. They're not always making mistakes. Sometimes they're doing the right thing, and that's something that really impressed Freeze with both Diaz and Xavier Atkins, who, as a transfer who hasn't played a ton and a guy who isn't an incoming true freshman, sometimes can be forgotten about a little bit, but Xavier Atkins could be it could be an important part of what Auburn's trying to do on defense this season. 334-321-1390. Love to hear from you. Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. We will be back with more. You are listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive.
ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with Justin Ferguson. Bill Cameron beaming in as well with Drew at the controls. We did get a little bit of basketball news with the confirmation. I mean, we'd already talked about the Houston game in Birmingham,
right?
As a mid-November. I think folks knew when on the schedule, just through process of elimination, this game was going to be. But we got the confirmation this week, Justin. Auburn and Houston squaring off, and it's an ambitious non-conference schedule for Bruce Pearl brings an almost entirely new roster in to the season following last year's triumph.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's one of those things where it's like you come off of a season like that and now you hit the reset button, but it's an exciting reset button because you look at the roster and you think, especially with Tahai Pettiford leading the way, like this is a really, really fun group of players, and I think they're starting to. As we get closer and closer to the season, I think the hype's going to continue to build up because it's a great mix of guys that make so much sense in a Bruce Pearl system.
We've been in football mode for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and the thing with basketball, there's just not really a whole lot going on right now. They're practicing, but you know, it's not like interviews or like stuff that we can report on. But yes, it's a lot of the summer was very important for this crew.
Anyone other than Tahad that you keep thinking like, oh, I'm really excited to see what it looks like when he's out there?
Keyshawn Hall.
Okay.
Keyshawn Hall, just because when you lead the Big 12 in scoring, you're a guy who, you know, is 6'8 and is a downhill drive. That's the thing, is like he led the Big 12 in scoring, and it wasn't that he was this like guy who just shot from everywhere on the floor. Like he got to the rim really, really well. He's a fun power forward in this system, I think, and that's a guy that I like to see. But I mean, if there's several guys like that, Dan. I think Keyshawn Murphy is a great five in this system, and I think for the athletic kind of up and down style they want to play. And I think if you're looking for upside and potential, Elijah Freeman's got all the athleticism and skill in the world. It's just let's see how he makes the adjustment from D2 to D1, and then Filip Jovic is just kind of a unicorn type of player in terms of not being the type of player that Auburn usually goes out and gets in terms of his skill set and in terms of his background.
It's such an adjustment moving from Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell to what you have now in the front court. But I feel pretty good about the moves they've made. I really want to see Abdi Bashir, Caden Magwood, you know, some of these other
Abdul.
And what did I say?
Abdi.
Abdul Bashir and Caden Magwood, like guys who, yeah. I just think like there are going to be minutes in the backcourt.
And I've continued to say this offseason, I think Kevin Overton's the most underrated player Auburn got, and I think he's going to be a great fit for this team. I think he has got the two-way type of off-ball guard impact that you want to have if you're Auburn. I think I see a lot of Denver Jones in him in terms of like that want to, that desire on defense, that veteran type of play. And when he gets going, he can really get going. Got good size too at that position. And when he gets going, it can be a lot of fun. I think he didn't score a ton at Texas Tech because I think his role fluctuated so much. I love the way he shoots the ball. He's got a beautiful, quick lefty release. And I think he's going to be a fun one to watch this season.
Yeah, the possibilities that there are, the different combinations. I mean, it's really fun to think about. And I agree with you, Justin. I think Overton seems like one of those glue pieces that Bruce and every team really wants to have.
100%. And I think, you know, I always like to just kind of track it, and maybe, you know, not to get back to football, but maybe there might be some Jackson Arnold to this as well. Like, there's a parallel here. I just go back to the fact that when Kevin Overton hit the transfer portal at Texas Tech, there were a good bit of Texas Tech folks that wanted him back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I think that's usually a big sign of a guy coming out of the portal. And I think it was just, you know, he was on a team last season where, you know, it was kind of up and down in terms of his minutes. They had a freshman they really, really wanted to play early, and it kind of cut into his playing time. But he checks a ton of boxes. I think if you just ripped away the stats from last season and showed, okay, here's Kevin Overton. He's played two seasons of college basketball on NCAA tournament teams. You know, he's 6'5". Here's what his shot looks like. Here's what his defensive, here's what he can do on defense. If you'd have put that player out, you'd be pretty excited about that kind of guy coming to Auburn. I think some people immediately saw him when he came in, especially after it was the same way it was like a day after, or maybe the day of, when Chad hit the portal.
It was the
same
day.
It was like 3 hours after it was made official.
And I think some people look at it and say, oh, 7 points a game, what the big deal. It's just, I think if you go past that and dig into him, his game is very, very intriguing.
Yeah, the way the phrase Pearl used when Auburn signed Kevin Overton, like he plays a style that impacts winning, right? Like it's the stuff he does. You know, whether it's the 3-point shot, whether it's the defense, and Bruce Pearl cited. You think about the other names: Bashir, Magwood, Freeman. even Tahad. Like, you need a veteran. You need an older guy. You need a guy who's been through the fire and played some college basketball to mix in with those guys. Some major conference college basketball. You know, one of Overton's best games last season was against Arizona in the Big 12 tournament. So, I mean, this is a guy that I think Bruce Pearl was willing to dig a little bit beyond the numbers to see what Auburn is picking up in Kevin Overton, and that's someone that folks are really excited to see when the season starts. And Auburn with a couple of games, and then, I mean, we've said it before, Justin, Houston, Purdue, Michigan, and Florida could very well be four of the five, if not the top four, in the preseason. In preseason polls, when we get them for college basketball, Auburn's playing all four of those teams. They're playing all four of them away from home. But the closest of those games is they've got Houston and Birmingham, and that's a big early test for this new look Auburn team. Like Houston, I mean, because Houston brings back a talented team from last year's.
You could easily make them preseason number one with what they got. You know, what they brought back from a team that was close to winning the national championship. And, oh, by the way, you know, they added one of the best recruiting classes in the country with one of the best players in the country coming in out of high school. So, yeah, no one's going to be more tested than Auburn, and I think that's a really fun one.
334-321-13. Go ahead.
Yeah, by the way, did you see did y'all happen to see today the Mark Pope – proposal?
No.
So Mark Pope, just because we were talking basketball, Mark Pope had an interview with, he sat down with CBS, I think it was Matt Norlander, and he said if he had to change college basketball, one of the big things he would change is he wanted the transfer portal entry period to be just 5 days after the NCAA tournament ends. Just,
well, that's fine.
Go ahead and knock it out. Here's his crazy one though. He wants a 40 game regular season with 24 SEC games. He wanted a 24 game SEC schedule. And, that was his proposal that everybody play 40 games. You play 24 in your conference,
and I'm. Did,
that would be a bloodbath.
Was
that would be
why?
No,
you know what? I would imagine it's revenue, Bill. I would imagine the thought is, especially at Kentucky, you add 10 more home games to the schedule, and it could make an impact on the revenue that you're suddenly paying out to players. Like I would think. I mean, we're seeing who is it offering to? Who's selling tickets to the press conference? Justin, we saw that, didn't we? There's somebody. Was it Oklahoma?
It is Oklahoma.
Do you know what I'm talking about, Bill? There's a promotion at Oklahoma. You know, there's different things. You know, Auburn's done this too. Oh,
Auburn's letting fans pay $100 and watch practice.
You can pay $100 watch practice. You can sit in the corner of the end zone or whatever. Oklahoma is selling a two person. I think it's like $600. And it's two tickets to the post game media availability.
So they get to ask questions.
They do not.
For $600, I'd want to ask a question.
and the other thing too is that like Kentucky fans can watch Kentucky's basketball's post game press conferences. So like I've already known people who can do this for free, which is by the way going back to the Mark Pope question, he said he wanted to move the start of the season up to mid-October, and he wanted a 40-game regular season. He said, one, our guys do better academically during the season than they do out of season. Two, when our guys go to the NBA, they played a 31-game regular season. This was my experience. When I got to the All-Star break my first year in the league, I feel like I had played two seasons already, and I still had 60 games left to play, so I don't know if it's a good prep for the NBA. He went on to say, our teams turn over so much because of the current environment, but to give our teams a chance to go through a couple evolutions in one season they used to go through, now they have to get used to one or two or three seasons to get those evolutions of growth. Now we're trying to squeeze in one season that could use some more games. And our fans like to get to know these kids more. Every single game last year, our fans got to know our guys so much better. Our fans deserve it. And when you're tying all this into revenue share, there shouldn't be anybody that's going to complain. Players, coaches, fans, about getting to 40 games where everyone's going to be making money off of it.
We had a caller recently ask about whether or not there's going to be an appetite for expanding the college football regular season. And
I just think the playoff's so long.
My short answer is no, but at the same time, I feel like a lot of the arguments about player safety and player health that people used to make, it was easier for those folks to make those arguments pre-revenue sharing. And now it's like, all right, well,
I think the health thing still stands.
I think so too. But
you're still getting hit.
For sure. But I wonder if they're going to make those arguments as strongly in an era where it's like, well, now you understand what four extra college football games or 10 or 15 extra. I know it's different in basketball. Like it's not the
same.
Yeah,
my problem there is just like, you know, I think the NFL season's already too dadgum long anyway, so like anything lengthening it out is rough.
And I think
it's just so tough on these guys.
Well, lengthening the NBA season or like lengthening the college basketball season, you know, because it's NBA prep is a little bit flimsy, but I do wonder the thought of starting the college basketball season 2 or 3 weeks early and adding eight to ten games to team schedules, I don't know if that would be welcomed across the sport, but I bet there are some schools that would be absolutely willing to do that.
Oh, I'm sure there would be.
I mean, like, and it's, you know, I can, I don't know, like, I, again, from play, like, from a revenue standpoint, from, I don't know if everybody would necessarily want to do it, but I could see certainly basketball powerhouses that see it as a, you know, as potentially beneficial. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Let's take a break. We'll be back with more. You are listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive.
Hey, this is DeMarcus Ridge.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the show. Bill and Dan. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Drew at the controls. Justin, tell folks again, you've been extensively covering the Auburn football preseason. Tell folks where they can find your work over at auburnobserver.com.
Yep. auburnobserver.com, like Dan said. It is $4 a month or $40 for your first full year of the Observer. If you subscribe between now and the start of the season. So it's a great time to hop on board. And everything we do gets emailed out to you. So like yesterday afternoon, it had a huge, huge notebook full of I think I had a handful of takeaways from every position coach interview that we had, every assistant coach interview from this week. And then today, pretty loaded practice observations. So injury report, who caught our eye, some more context behind the Hugh Freeze, Jackson Arnold clip that has gotten even more popular since that went up. And then a couple of really good conversations we had with Darrell Robinson and Rayshon Pleasant, wrote about those as well. And then Dan and I are going to have a podcast in the morning that will talk all things Auburn football here in the preseason. So go to auburnobserver.com, sign up there. Once you pay your subscription, we email everything out to you. So as soon as a podcast or a newsletter drops, you get it right in your email inbox.
Wonder how long before we hear some details about the scrimmage.
Well, it hadn't happened yet.
Hasn't happened yet. And you know,
we didn't hear an awful lot last week.
And that's something, you know, I would imagine, what, maybe Monday or Tuesday, you know, who knows the next time we'll speak with Coach Freeze. But the coaching staff – talking to the media this week made it clear this is an important one for you know, it's last looks before you really get into game planning for Baylor, and it's important for these guys to be sharp. And now that we know, yeah, you might be careful about this, but now that it seems like some receivers may take it easy or even skip tomorrow's scrimmage, may be inactive for tomorrow's scrimmage, that only puts more pressure on everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, you would think it would make it a little bit tougher for the offense if those receivers can't go tomorrow. And I think there's a little pressure on the offense, too, after the word of how the defense handled the offense the first time around. You know, there's a lot of that naturally happens the first time because the defense knows what the offense has been doing. But now it's on the offense to see if they can come back and add some wrinkles of their own and try to do something to be able to even things up.
That's right, and so we will wait to hear word about the scrimmage on Friday, and then Auburn getting into, what was it you called it, Justin? Like extended?
Yeah, it's usually like an extended game week prep. Yeah, just kind of a extra game week preparation. And you know, Free said they're going to go ahead and start practicing this upcoming week after the scrimmage on Friday, like they're getting ready for a game on Friday. So,
right, and we'll chase you down sometime next week, and then of course, crazy to think, like 2 weeks from today,
yep,
you're on the flight to Texas, and yeah. 2 weeks,
I mean,
from
two weeks from right now, I will have been in Dallas for several hours, and me and Jason Caldwell are probably trying to find some barbecue somewhere.
Yeah,
if it's like any of our other normal trips,
there's decent barbecue around
in
Love,
Dallas,
in Dallas,
yeah.
and around,
yeah,
Love,
I would think you
and,
could find
I
some.
Think we'll
and
be
around
all right.
Both airports and, you know, around, yeah, Love Field. I don't know if that's the one you're
we
DFW.
So there's a group of us who are all staying at the same hotel in Arlington.
Okay.
There's the weekend has a concert at Jerry World that Thursday night, and some of them are going. I am not a part of that crew, so
Nathan King's going.
Yeah,
right.
yeah,
for
but,
sure.
But yeah, we're looking forward to it, and I'm excited to go to Waco. Never been to Waco before, and I'm hearing that atmosphere for that Baylor game should be as good as it gets.
Should be a lot of fun. AuburnObserver.com, folks. You can find everything Justin is cooking up at his outstanding website. More a show tomorrow. Should have Bill Cameron. Should have Coach Don Dunn.
Yeah, he ought to be in.
You know, looking forward to that.
Didn't you move Jake Crane?
We'll have Jake Crane in hour number two tomorrow as well. So you're not going to want to miss any of that. Until then, for Bill, for Justin, for Drew, this is Dan Peck signing off. Good night.